From Gettysburg to Johnstown, Bedford to Lafayette Hill, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board is continuing to punish businesses for failing to adhere to COVID-era restrictions implemented by the Wolf administration. Eric Boehm of Reason Magazine joins us with details. Connecting high school and college wrestlers with those who can help them further their business careers is the mission of the Wrestlers in Business Network. Joe Geiger has Dave Fallon in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And Harrisburg Democrats are taking aim at Main Street with a proposal to quadruple taxes on small businesses. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania talks about it on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Eric Boehm of Reason Magazine in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Governor Josh Shapiro is proposing to spend millions to design and implement a so-called blueprint for higher education, which would create a new level of bureaucracy, combining the state system of higher education universities with local community colleges. The governor did not include the chancellor of the state system in his planning, but PennLive reports he has hired outside consultants to design the plan, which, aside from a lack of planning and details, is already being criticized as an attempt to wrest control of community colleges from locals and place them more firmly under the jurisdiction of the state. Pittsburgh area Congresswoman Summer Lee has come under fire from the local Jewish community for what many perceive to be anti-Semitic views and rhetoric. Now the Jewish Insider reports that an Instagram account named Dear White Staffers that circulates among Capitol Hill staffers and which has become more openly anti-Semitic in the week since the October 7th terrorist attacks in Israel has been linked to a Summer Lee staff member. Lee is a first-term Democrat who faces both primary and general election opposition. The Center Square is detailing a new report from the Reason Foundation, which provides an analysis that compares the rapidly rising cost of K-12 public education in the years prior to the COVID-19 pandemic and the years since the pandemic's onset. Overall, education spending increased by 49% over the past two decades, with the steepest rise in cost for employee benefits, which soared 173%. Meanwhile, the cost of actual education instruction rose just 34%. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. During COVID-era lockdowns, the Wolf administration implemented draconian policies that not only failed to address the health crisis in any meaningful way, but also forced many small businesses to close. Some refused to comply, and now the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board is striking back. Eric Boehm of Reason Magazine recently wrote an article on the heavy-handed tactics of the PLCB. Eric, by the way, is a regular contributor to our sister radio program, American Radio Journal. He joins us now to discuss the lingering heavy hand of state government. Eric, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Eric, I realize this question is going to give a lot of people nightmarish flashbacks, but as we talk about what the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board is still doing to punish establishments for COVID restrictions that maybe they didn't follow exactly, you want to go back and just review what it was that happened with those restrictions during that period of time.
I think that's a great place to start, especially here in March of 2024. We're coming up now on the four-year anniversary, right, of the beginning of that wild and insane period in American history. And I think in Pennsylvania, it was some of the worst lockdowns in the country. You had the governor's office, the Department of Health, literally drawing up lists of types of businesses that were allowed to stay open and others that were forced to close on what seemed to me, at least, to be incredibly arbitrary. An incredibly arbitrary basis. You know, a dry cleaner was allowed to, had to be closed, but other things could stay open. Made very little sense at the time. I think it makes far, far less sense now with the hindsight that we have. But I think it's important for people to remember that. I think on one hand, I want to move past that. I don't like thinking about that period of time, and I'm glad that we've come out of it. But on the other hand, I think there are some really important lessons that came out of the initial response to COVID. And then even the not so much the initial response, but even the stuff that went on 6 months or a year later. I know in Pennsylvania, there was another round of lockdowns for bars and restaurants during the holiday season in 2020. I mean, that was 9 months in. We had a pretty good sense at that point of what this thing was, of what COVID was. People could make their own risk assessments by then. So I think it was completely heavy-handed on the part of the government to come in and issue another round of closures then. I did some reporting at the time, actually went to a brewery in Bethlehem that defied the governor's order around Christmas time of 2020. And the owner of that brewery told me for the piece that I wrote, you know, look, everybody who's here voluntarily came here. People are aware of the risks. If they choose to come and socialize, they're, you know, weighing those risks and making that decision for themselves. And I continue to think that that's basically the right approach. And certainly by, you know, by 9 months in, that was the right approach. So, yeah, a lot of really, really questionable things went on in 2020. A lot of bad decisions, I think, by governments and probably by individuals, too. But I think it's good to keep some of those things in mind.
And we are learning more and more about the consequences. But let's talk now specifically about the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board. And your article, The Liquor Board Strikes Back, in Reason Magazine, you talked about the Burning Bridge Tavern and their particular experience with the draconian measures that the PLCB implemented and continue to implement. So tell us a bit about what happened to that particular business.
Yeah, the Burning Bridge Tavern is a small bar in Wrightsville, Pennsylvania. It's right down on the Susquehanna River there in York County. And they got in trouble a couple of times during the pandemic, had a bunch of citations from the PLCB for various things, which, look, I understand the PLCB takes their job very seriously, but some of these citations I find a little bit, I'm a little bit skeptical of whether they needed to be written up for this. In one case, they had allowed a band that was playing at an outdoor gathering in the street out in front of the tavern. They had allowed the band to use their electric supply to plug in their amps, and that was a violation because bars were not supposed to be open at the time. Bars were shut down. The owner of the Burning Bridge Tavern and the people who worked there had worked with the town, actually, to organize these like public gatherings outside the bar, again, so people could come and socialize in a relatively safer environment, even at a time when bars and restaurants were still required to be closed. Another offense occurred because the owners and some of his family members were drinking inside the tavern. You know, they had gathered in a space that was closed, in fairness, but also they owned the place. And so it seems like that's, I don't know, I wouldn't have written them up for that either. But anyway, these citations are on their record. And when they went to renew their liquor license last year, they found out they had some difficulty in doing that because of this record of citations. So they were forced to sign. And we could talk about how much the force plays into this or not, but they were basically forced to sign something called a conditional licensing agreement by the PLCB. And what that says is it says, okay, you can have your license again for a period of years, but if there are additional citations at any point in the near future, you can then lose your license. And that also caused their insurance premiums to spike for the bar because that sort of thing goes through the system and sets off red alerts for the insurance company. Says, oh, this is a dangerous bar, this is a risky bar, so that forces them to spend more money. So there's been a bunch of consequences here. Yes, they're still open, they're still operating, but it's obviously cost them some money. It's going to cost them more money in the future, and it's going to put potentially their livelihood at risk if they do have, you know, some other incident that occurs. And they're far from the only ones, as I detail in the piece. There's been dozens of bars and restaurants across the state that have similarly, in the past year or two, been forced to sign these conditional licensing agreements due to citations they received during COVID. And I think it's just, it's a reminder of how that era, those bad decisions that were made during that era, are still with us even 4 years later.
And so these bad decisions that were made 4 years ago, which we now realize were bad decisions, you still have the bureaucracy here, Eric, punishing people for just trying to keep their business alive, not go bankrupt under a forced government shutdown. Is this an example, and I know you've written about this quite a bit in Reason, you've talked about it on our American Radio Journal program, is this really a blaring example of bureaucratic overreach by the PLCB?
I think yes. I think it is within the PLC. This is a situation where the PLCB, I think, is fully within their rights to do the thing that they're doing. I think it's a question of discretion. It's a question of the board that runs the actual board of the liquor control board just making a poor decision in this case. Every one of these conditional licensing agreements has come up at a board meeting and had to be voted on by the three-member PLCB. There was actually quite a bit of a fight over the first couple of these because there was one board member who has since departed from the board who was voting against them. So a lot of these were approved via 2-1 votes. His name was Michael Negra. He had actually talked at the very first PLCB meeting where the first one of these COVID-related conditional licensing agreements was approved. That was back in January of 2022. He and another one of the board members had a little bit of a public spat, actually, over whether this was the right action to take. He said that he felt businesses had already paid their dues during the pandemic and shouldn't face any additional penalties. And another one of the board members, Mary Eisenhower, said, quote, "The people who violated the governor's mandates and orders should face some consequences." That was her point of view. And that's been the view that has dominated the board. And so that's why these types of things keep getting approved. So I think the board is probably within their rights and within their powers, within their authorities to do the thing that they're doing. But I would prefer that we take Michael Negra's point of view on this. And take the perspective that that these establishments have obviously gone through some difficult times, have paid their dues, certainly probably more than they needed to during the pandemic, and we should all agree that some bad decisions were made. But let's just let bygones be bygones and move on.
Well, this goes to a larger issue here, Eric, which is when Mary Eisenhower, when she talks about, well, they defied the governor's orders, we the people reined the governor in by amending our constitution to eliminate his emergency powers. So at any point, was that taken into consideration that the governor clearly overstepped his bounds? We had a historic referendum where we amended the constitution in order to end those powers. Does that not play into the decision-making process at the PLCB at all?
Apparently it doesn't. No, that doesn't seem like that's come up at all. I think that is one of the more interesting stories of the pandemic. Something else that I've covered at Reason, though, is the extent to which Pennsylvania was maybe the worst or one of the worst states when it came to these lockdowns and governor's orders that really didn't make much sense. And then there was actually a backlash there against it, right? There was, as you said, an amendment to the Constitution. There was significant pushback from the legislature. There was, that's exactly what the democratic system is supposed to do, right? It's supposed to be, there were these checks and balances that happened in Pennsylvania. We didn't really see that in a lot of other states. There have been some, limited actions to curtail gubernatorial powers in places like Kentucky, a few other states as well, but nothing like the change that was made to the Pennsylvania Constitution. And certainly in bluer states, nothing even approaching that, where you had some pretty severe lockdowns, but not much pushback at all from the legislature. So I think Pennsylvania is really a fascinating place and will continue to be, like, for historians and political scientists as we look back at this period of time. But yeah, I mean, to your point, it doesn't seem like that has filtered through all the way to the bureaucracy. It seems like the PLCB, more or less, operating, doing whatever they'd like. Their perspective on this, we just should put that in there. I mean, I did talk to them for the article, and their perspective on this is that licensees are under no obligation to sign these conditional licensing agreements, which is a little misleading, right? Because the alternative is you shut down your business. You don't have a liquor license anymore. You effectively don't. You can't run a bar. Your restaurant business is obviously going to change quite a bit, too. So the PLCB says, hey, we're not forcing anybody to do this, but it's, it's coercion just of a different kind.
Eric Boehm writes for Reason Magazine. And Eric, tell us a little bit about Reason Magazine, Reason the Foundation, and also where can folks go online if they want to read Reason Magazine or subscribe to the print version?
Yeah, you can check out my work online at reason.com. You can, of course, listen to me every week, American Radio Journal, another show that you produce, Loman. Thank you so much for having us on there every week. Reason Magazine is the magazine of free minds and free markets. We're the most prominent libertarian publication in the country. We advocate, obviously, for freedom and for liberty. And we advocated for that during the pandemic, but we've been doing it for decades, long before then, and hopefully for a long time in the future, too.
Eric Boehm of Reason Magazine. Hey, Eric, thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much, Loman.
The Wrestlers in Business Network seeks to match up high school and college wrestlers with those who can help them further their professional careers. To learn more, Joe Geiger has Dave Fallon in the Community Benefits Spotlight.
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Dave, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program.
Yeah, it's great, and appreciate you having me.
Dave, as the WIBN's Career Service Coordinator, would you share with our listeners what the acronym WIBN stands for?
So WIBN is an acronym for Wrestlers in Business Network. What WIBN is, it's a networking organization in which we connect former and current wrestlers with business and career opportunities. So really what we're trying to do is just create a lifelong relationship between wrestlers and the sport of wrestling so that when they are done competing, they have a natural landing spot for the next chapter in their life, which, you know, for nearly every single wrestler is a professional career.
This is a relatively new initiative. Where did we get a model for that, and what is the model?
WIBN is about 10 years old, but and it may seem like a long time. However, you know, it really started off as a volunteer organization, very regionally focused. So our first chapter was started by a gentleman named Aaron Grossman in Cleveland, Ohio. And it really just kind of started off as a way to help out wrestlers in their professional lives. And it kind of caught hold in certain locations across the country. And about 3 years ago, it began to become an operating division of the National Wrestling Coaches Association, or the NWCA. And from there, it's really kind of exploded. We have just over 30 chapters across the country, to include three in the state of Pennsylvania, one in Pittsburgh, one in Lancaster, and then the other in Philadelphia. So there's a lot of growth, and we've added some capacity to help not just with former wrestlers, but with current wrestlers, whether they're in high school or college. So it's been fun to watch it grow.
So as a business network, I would assume that most of the leaders of these chapters at one time wrestled. Maybe they coached. Is that pretty much the case, or do you see a wide range of people that want to run these chapters?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because wrestling is just such a loyal sport. And while the majority of our members certainly do have some sort of wrestling background, there are plenty that never stepped foot on the mat themselves. But maybe they had a child, son or daughter that got involved in the sport, and then they just witnessed that level of commitment, that dedication, and just found a level of appreciation that they didn't find in any other sport. And so they kind of gravitated towards WIBN as a way that they could stay active and continue to help grow the sport in their own way.
At what stage does the WIBN connect with a wrestler?
Up until about 2 years ago, we really were kind of connecting with younger professionals, maybe in their late 20s, early 30s, to mid-level professionals. There's really three reasons that we have found that people become involved in WIBN. Number one is they want to network and create opportunities for themselves, of course. Number two is they really just want to stay involved with the sport of wrestling. And then the third, and this one really resonates with a lot of our members, is that they want to help mentor and guide the next generation of wrestlers that are coming up through the ranks. So while we initially started kind of focused on those mid-level professionals, young professionals, we've really pivoted over the last couple of years to focus, not exclusively, but have a deliberate focus on our current college athletes. And we have goals to help connect our younger high school athletes with career opportunities as well, because we know very well that, you know, there's only about 2.5% of all high school wrestlers go on to college, and college enrollment is dropping. So we need to have a landing spot for our high school athletes that may choose not to go to college. And so we want to be able to connect them with career opportunities, or with the trades, or with the military, and certainly with college for those that are electing to go on that route.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program, and my guest today is Dave Fallon, serving as WIBN's Career Service Coordinator. Dave, what's attractive to our businessmen, business people, about wrestling, about wrestlers as potential employees?
When you think about the sport of wrestling, you think about someone who has really, really made a serious commitment to the sport. I mean, there's only one way in the sport of wrestling, as you know, Joe. And these companies, every company, I don't care, you know, what industry you're in, are always looking for employees who have that level of commitment, that are dedicated, that are goal-oriented, that are team-oriented and resilient. They know how to stand on their own two feet, and they accept responsibility and accountability for their, you know, their actions, their results. And so companies really kind of gravitate towards the sport of wrestling. And while wrestling certainly hasn't cornered the market on, you know, those sort of characteristics and attributes of its participants, they certainly do possess them. What's really unique is that companies want to hire athletes. They do. But where wrestling stands alone is that we are actually the only sport, to my knowledge, that is organized in this manner that can actually connect these companies with these athletes. In this case, we're talking wrestlers.
WIBN is a nonprofit program, and it's the first of its kind. You don't see the other sports out there creating the opportunities that WIBN is creating.
That's 100% true. Yes, we are a nonprofit organization. Again, we're an operating division of the NWCA. Wrestling has always sort of been a sport that's kind of had to fight for its existence, and we've had to sort of rebrand ourselves in certain ways, and this is a way in which we can do that. What our real long-term strategy and goal is to attract those that may not know that much about wrestling to the sport of wrestling. We want there to be a pipeline from our sport to boardrooms to corporate America that can then advocate for the sport and help grow awareness, grow appreciation, and ultimately just grow participation.
Approximately how many chapters are there? And if somebody listening to the program would like to contact one, get involved, how would they do that?
We have just, over, I think, 31 chapters right now, and we continue to grow. We just added a new chapter in out in Omaha, Nebraska. These chapters are all over the country. Like I said, we have three in the state of Pennsylvania, Delaware, Princeton, New Jersey. I'm just talking about kind of relative to Pennsylvania and what's close to there, Washington, D.C., of course. But if someone is interested in either becoming part of a WIBN chapter or might be even interested in starting a chapter in their own area, they can certainly go to www.wrestlersinbusiness.org. They can check out the website. There's a spot in there where you can send a question in, try to get in touch with us, and we're happy to talk with anyone that shares in this idea and this concept.
So, Dave, you have a virtual career day coming up on April 4th. Tell us a little bit about that.
One of the things that WIBN has been doing here in the recent year and a half is hosting career fairs for our college athletes. We posted an in-person career fair at the National Duels, which is the largest college wrestling tournament in the country. And then we hosted a virtual career fair in September. We had over 1,000 college athletes and 40 companies that participated in that. Our next upcoming event is scheduled for April the 4th. And again, it's going to be a virtual event with athletes from all over the country attending. We expect to have about 1,500 to 2,000 athletes at this one because we are growing and the awareness is there. So we're super excited about that. We're always looking for companies to connect with our college athletes. And, you know, anyone that's interested in participating, either as a candidate looking for a career opportunity or as a company looking to hire candidates, can go, again, to www.wrestlersinbusiness.org. And the information about the career fair is on the website.
This is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Dave Fallon, who is coordinator of the career services in the WIBN movement. Dave, thanks for being a guest on our program.
Thanks so much, Joe.
State House Democrats are proposing to quadruple taxes on small businesses. On this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary, Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, says this will have a devastating impact on mom and pop businesses.
Are Pennsylvania Democrats trying to make our Commonwealth the new Hawaii? Well, unfortunately, we may get our wish, but instead of our rolling hills and beautiful mountains becoming beachfront property with palm trees, we are potentially getting Hawaii's tax structure that ranks dead last in the nation. We've talked about the governor's egregious budget spending proposal, which eliminates the Commonwealth's rainy day fund. However, a once obscure proposal in the House may just be the poison pill that fills the revenue gap, one that seems to grow even bigger with each appropriations hearing in the Capitol and drives even more hardworking citizens from Pennsylvania. House Bill 1773, proposed by Representative Chris Rabb, would take direct aim at Main Street by obliterating small businesses and sole proprietors by quadrupling the tax rate to 12%. This, quote, fair share tax plan, as it is so ridiculously titled, would destroy any hope of the American dream in Pennsylvania while closing what remaining economic drivers we currently have. There is nothing fair about taking even more from our hardworking neighbors while Pennsylvanians continue to hurt due to the impact of Bidenomics. House Bill 1773 specifically takes on S corporations, which many small business owners use with their LLC, which already take on more scrutiny from the IRS than large C corporations, such as Microsoft, for taxation. It attacks sole proprietors, those who simply receive a check for their work and remit to the government their taxes. In short, This legislation would directly harm thriving small business owners and ensure that they are taxed to failure. What the author of this legislation and his co-sponsors don't seem to comprehend is Main Street is not Wall Street. Mom and pop shops don't have the luxury of giving the state more money when they oftentimes can't pay themselves. Mom and pop shops do not have the purchasing power they had just a few short years ago, nor do they have the workforce to help run their businesses. Over and over again, we hear of residents fleeing the Commonwealth for job opportunities. High tax rates create barriers to business, which create barriers to employment. According to the Commonwealth, 1.1 million small businesses operate in Pennsylvania, employing 2.5 million individuals, which account for 99.6% of the businesses in the state. If this bill, or if anything of its nature, were to pass, it would have the reverse effect of its stated intent. This quadrupling of taxes projects a $6.2 billion to $6.6 billion windfall that would only prop up the government for a very short time, because just as they will have exhausted the rainy day fund, an exhausted Main Street will no longer exist. The concerns for this Commonwealth are very real. We have a declining population, an aging population, a contracting economy, bloated pension plans, unfunded liabilities so bad they make our general fund look healthy. The list goes on. Instead of being creative and using free market principles to address our current economic crisis, Harrisburg Democrats are taking cues from economically failing states and attempting to build their tax structure right here in Harrisburg. What the Democrats cannot bring to Pennsylvania from Hawaii is the tropical beauty and warm weather. So instead, they are bringing the Aloha State's affinity for crushing taxes, high cost of living, and we must do better. Join us in the fight for a freer Pennsylvania by heading to AmericansForProsperity.org and taking action today. Again, head to AmericansForProsperity.org, take action today, and join our movement for more. This is Emily Green, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is coming up April 4th through 6th at the Penn Harris Hotel and Convention Center near Harrisburg. This year's featured dinner speaker will be Judge Jeanine Pirro of Fox News The Five. She will be joined by a wide range of state and national speakers, including Mid-State Congressman Scott Perry, who recently served as chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, and Mary Catherine Hamm, who has been a conservative analyst for both Fox News and CNN. The three-day event will also include an expanded schedule of workshops. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the nation's largest and longest running. This is our 35th year of the state-based conservative activist conferences in the nation. Get complete details and register for this year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference at paleadershipconference.org. That's paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. ¶¶